Ladies and gentlemen,
what?
38 years now. I have tried to get this man on my show several times. He is a fascinating man. I'm actually a little bit in awe that I'm going to be speaking to him, and it's going to be interesting to see which way this interview goes. I'm talking to the David Icke. Hello, David.
Hello, Pete. I had no idea you were trying to get on me for that long. 38 years?
38
Crikey.
Years. You're a child star.
Where have I been?
I've got to say something before we even start talking about the book. I used to rate you as a sports presenter.
Well, that's very kind. Yeah. But I'd reached the point, Pete, to be honest, by the time I ended that, where I'd frankly had enough of it, because I've found it quite... you know, the television to be quite vacuous, really. I loved the presenting when I did it, but all the backroom stuff and all the politics and stuff that you get at the BBC and stuff, not for me. But I did love doing it.
Isn't it interesting, though, these days the politics has come out, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they used to say when I was at the BBC that they get so confused they stab each other in the chest, you know? it is a political organisation. But I did love the presenting. It was great, especially the snooker, because the characters in the snooker were just amazing, especially in those days. The Jimmy Whites, the Cliff Thorburns, and all those people of that era. Bill Werbenick, who had to have all the beer before he went out to play. It was just so much fun.
Do you still follow sport?
Oh, very much so, yeah. My two boys, they were played in goal. My older son, Gareth, he played in goal for the England beach soccer team for quite a while, played abroad and what have you with them. And my other son, Jamie, he was on trial at Manchester United at one point. He had a trial at Aston Villa. He played for the Portsmouth youth team for about 4 years when he was a schoolboy. So I keep up with it, and I keep up with the football, absolutely.
David, was it one day you completely changed? I mean, I remember the Wogan interview, so we won't even go there. But was it one day you changed and you went, enough is enough, this is the way I'm going with my life?
Well, how long have you got? I mean, the biggest point. I mean, first of all, what happened, Pete, is that I was a national spokesman for the British Green Party at the time. I was a sports presenter with the BBC, and during 1989, a very, very strange thing started to happen to me. From quite early on in that year, I felt that when I was in a room alone, that I wasn't alone. I'd never had that feeling before. It was very strange. Anyway, I just got on with my life, but this got more and more tangible. And it, about a year later, in March 1990, I was in the Kensington Hilton Hotel, not far from, just across from Shepherd's Bush. I was working for the BBC. And I sat in this hotel room by myself, and the overwhelming feeling that there was some presence in the room was overwhelming. And I just said into the room, if there's something there, would you please contact me, because you're driving me up the wall. And then about just a matter of maybe 3 weeks later, I'm on the seafront here in Ryde on the Isle of Wight with my son playing football, Gareth, little boy at the time. And we were going to have some lunch at a Greasy Joe Cafe on the station on the seafront. But as we got there, someone from the railway came over and started talking to me about football. In fact, I think it was the day that I seem to remember the Liverpool played Southampton in a cup match, and he was asking me how he thought it would go on. Anyway, as the conversation ended, I realized Gareth wasn't there, but I knew where he would be. He'd be in the newsagent shop looking at the steam train books, which we kind of both like. And I walked into the shop and I said to Gareth, come on, we're going to get some lunch. And as I turned to walk back towards the door, my feet were stuck to the ground. I mean, this sounds like some kind of fantasy, but it's actually what happened. And I wouldn't say that I heard a voice. No, it was more like a very strong thought form went through my mind from somewhere saying, go and look at the books on the far side. So I go on, I walk across to these books in this new judge, which I knew very well, in a kind of bewildered state, thinking, what the heck is going on? And I was even more bewildered because the books in that bookshop were like Barbara Cartland and Mills and Boone, you know, romantic novels. What am I walking towards these books for? And in among them, when I got there, was this one book. It's called Mind to Mind. It had a woman's face on the front. And I turned it over and read the blurb. And it was by this psychic lady, right? So I took it because of what was happening to me. And I read it in 24 hours and contacted her. And went to see her. She lived near Brighton. And all I said to her was, I've got arthritis. Maybe your hands-on healing might help, right? Because she did that as well. I never told her anything. But what I really went for was, would she pick up what the hell I've been feeling for the last year? And anyway, the third time I went, I'm sitting on this medical-type bench in her front room, and she's doing the hands-on healing on my left knee. And I suddenly felt very, very clearly like a spider's web has just dropped on my face. And that really made me kind of sit up a bit, because I'd read in her book that when other levels of reality are trying to lock into you and make a contact, then you sometimes feel like a spider's web on your face. What I realize it is now is electromagnetic energy. That's what how the connections are made. And that's the same energy that makes the hairs on your neck stand up when you're in an excited crowd generating lots of emotion. Anyway, I didn't say anything to this lady. I just thought, you know, crikey, this is what she said in her book. And about 10, 15 seconds later, she launches her head back and says, I've got to close my eyes for this one. This is powerful. So my backside's now slipping down this bench, because this is all new to me. I don't know what the hell's going on. And she starts telling me that some figure in her mind is telling her that I'm going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets and loads of things, all of which have since happened. Or happening, one of the things that I was told was that from now on, I was going to be led to knowledge. I was going to be led to information, and other information would be put into my mind, and I'd wonder, where did that come from? Well, you know, from the time I left her home and actually got on a train to go and present a program for the BBC, fully enough, that process happened, and. Or the books that I've written and the endless books that I've written really since have come as a result of the most extraordinary synchronicity, where I've walked into people, experiences, documents, books, all kinds of sources of information that have all been like handing me puzzle pieces. You know, like you're putting a jigsaw puzzle together and someone's handing you the pieces and basically showing you where it goes. And so once I realized that this was happening and this developing picture of what was really happening in the world was unfolding before me. That's when I thought, you know, I'm going to go with this. And I've been going with it ever since. And of course, I've taken enormous amounts of ridicule and historic levels, really, if you look at it years ago. But by keeping going, more and more people from every walk of life now are looking at the information and thinking, well, actually, it does actually make sense. It shouldn't, but it does. And so I'm delighted, to say the least, that I, despite the ridicule, I kept going.
I'm talking to David Icke. We're going to talk about the book in one second. Just pick up on just something you said. Because you were in the media, because you were very high profile, how much did it hurt that the mainstream media declared you as mad and dangerous?
Well, it was obviously a new experience for me, and you know, for a while, you felt a bit punch drunk, really. But you know something, one of the things I say in the book is life often gives you your greatest gift, brilliantly disguised as your worst nightmare, and. You know, when you look at what's in my books and how it challenges convention on every level you could think of and challenges perceived reality on every level, then if you're going to do that, then if you are in any way concerned about what other people think of you, then you ain't going to go there. because you're constantly going to be, like most people do, you're censoring and editing yourself by saying, well, I can't say that because they think I'm crazy. I can't say that. They'll think I'm mad. So what that enormous ridicule did for me in 91, 92, 93 was clear me of the concern of what other people thought of me, because it seemed like everyone was laughing anyway. So, you know, who cares what people think? They just get on with your life. So that clearance of the prison that most people live in, which is the fear of what other people think, gave me the gift that when information came in the years that followed, that was kind of really far out there, to say the least, from, you know, the perceived normal, then I didn't have a problem putting it out there. And people said to me, you know, didn't you know they'd laugh at you when you wrote that or said that? I thought, do you know I did? Do you know I had an idea they might? But I didn't care, because what I'm interested in is what's happening in the world and why the world is as it is. I'm not interested in a statue. And a eulogy at my passing. You know what I mean? I just want to know what's going on in the world. And what I found, Pete, is that if what you say has validity and you keep saying it, then if it does have validity, it will eventually be shown to be so. If it doesn't, then of course it won't. But the reason that so many people now are looking at my books and looking at the events and the talks that I do and the stuff on the internet, videos and stuff, is because what I wrote in the 1990s is happening.
Yeah.
It's happening. And the reason it's happening is that there is an agenda for the world that is being manipulated from the unseen. You call it the hidden hand, whatever you want. And if you can access that agenda, then you can, you at least in theme and often in detail, you can predict the future, for a simple reason that if nothing intervenes on that agenda unfolding, then it will unfold. And this is why people like Aldous Huxley in Brave New World, published in 1932, and George Orwell, 1984, published in 1948, and they knew each other, by the way. Huxley taught Orwell French at the elite Eton College near Windsor. The reason that they could be so accurate is because they were not coming purely from their imagination. They were coming from an understanding of this projected agenda, which is projected a long way into the future. And one of the people I quote in this book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, and at greater length in the previous one, is a guy called Dr. Richard Day, who was a Rockefeller family insider. Therefore, he had access to this projected agenda. And in 1969, he addressed some pediatricians in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and asked them to turn off recording equipment and not to take notes, because he was going to tell them how the world was going to change and be transformed, because what the network basically he was connected to was going to change it. And what he said that day, not just in theme, Pete, but in detail, is happening now. Extraordinary. I mean, for instance, one of the things he said in 1969 is we're going to make boys and girls the same in 1969. And all this stuff with the transgender agenda, which is not about not discriminating against people of different sexual persuasions. I'm all for that. I mean, you know, I'm everyone to their own. There shouldn't be discrimination against anybody for anything. But this whole thing has gone so much further into confusing kids about gender that weren't confused before. And this is what he described would happen in 1969. And that's just one thing. So many other things. The use of terrorism to transform society. He talked about that was going to be used in 1969. So this is an agenda that if you access it, you can predict the future, because unless there's an intervention. And the whole point of what I do is to try to alert enough people so there is an intervention and we stop this nonsense, because where it's heading, and heading fast, and they're even announcing it now and openly talking about it, is to connect the human mind, the human brain, to artificial intelligence. So artificial intelligence takes over our thinking. And because their sales pitch is, oh, it will make us superhuman, they're now coming out in the open and saying, this is what we're going to do. Out of Silicon Valley, and the Google executive, Ray Kurzweil, who's one of the great promoters of this Frankenstein agenda, they're open about it because they wanted to sell it to us as a great thing. Actually, it's not going to make us superhuman. It's going to make us subhuman. That's the idea.
I've got to ask, David, who are they?
Well, they, again, you know, there's so many dots to connect. But to put it in its simplest way I can in an interview of this length, if you can imagine a spider's web, in the middle there's a spider. And the strands immediately around the spider, which is driving this agenda, which is global, by the way. I've just spent the last 18 months traveling the world, speaking in all over the world, literally, across Australia, America, the Balkans, Europe, Scandinavia. And the same things that I warn about in the books are happening everywhere, because I have a checklist whenever I go into a country of these of the wish list of this agenda. It's happening everywhere. It's global. And it's coming from this spider, which I'll mention in a second. The strands immediately around the spider in the web are the most exclusive secret societies, most of which people will never have heard of. As you come out from the spider, you then meet secret societies we have heard of, like the inner sanctum. And I mean inner sanctum because most Freemasons are completely in the dark as well, because it's so compartmentalized. The inner sanctum of Freemasonry, Knights Templar, Knights of Malta, etc., the inner core of the Jesuit order. And then you're still in the hidden when you meet those secret societies. And then there's a part of the web where what I call the cusp organizations are. This is where the hidden meets the seen. These are organizations like the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations in America that drives American foreign policy. The Club of Rome, which is designated to use the environment to transform the global society. And then you come through those organizations, and now you're in the scene. Now you're in government agencies, you're in governments, you're in banking, you're in corporations, you're in the media at ownership level, etc. And you're in Hollywood, you're in Silicon Valley. And what seems to happen to as we look on, as we go about our lives, is that decisions are being made by those organizations at random and independently. But when you research it, and I have now for nearly 30 years in nearly 60 countries, you realize that actually they're not random. They're part of a pattern. And what's happening is what we're seeing as decisions being made are actually decisions made by the spider that are being introduced through these agencies and organizations that we can see. And to go back to the spider, if you go deeper and deeper enough into that, then you are out of the human world and you're into a non-human force that is ultimately doing the manipulation. And this force has been talked about in ancient cultures all over the world for thousands of years, and it mirrors what I've been told by endless insiders of this agenda over the last 30 years.
So it's from another planet or a different era? Or different...
Well, this is the point, you see. It's a real challenge, but I do it in the books to connect the dots that are necessary for people to see that what appears on first hearing to be crazy is actually extremely logical when you put the dots together and you produce the evidence. And one of the things that keeps people in completely in the dark is the fact that the true nature of reality is not widely publicized. It's not in the education system. It's not in the mainstream media. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. People listening to this this program now will look around them wherever they are, and they will think that they are seeing everything there is to see in the space that they're looking at. But in fact, what they're actually seeing is only a tiny, tiny band of frequency, which the brain decodes into the reality that we perceive to be the world. For instance, according to mainstream science, electromagnetic spectrum is 0.005% of what exists in the universe. And visible light, which is the only band of frequency that we can actually see, is a fraction of the 0.005%. If you take the projected size of the universe, according to mainstream science currently, then by comparison, planet Earth is equivalent to 1/1,000,000,000th of a pinhead. So the great vastness of existence, we cannot see. The almost entirety of existence, we cannot see. We are actually perceiving a frequency band, just like a radio station or television station in the old analog system, which share the same space with other frequency bands, other radio and television stations, and that never the twain shall meet or be aware of each other unless they're very close on the dial, and then there's interference. So it's in dimensions of reality beyond human sight, which is kind of basically everything, but close enough for this interference to happen, that this reality we call the world is actually manipulated from. When you think of the tiny band of frequency we can see, and yet you look at all the incredible diversity of form. Look at the diversity of form in the human in the human race. Look at the diversity of form in the animal world and the insect world and the natural world. Imagine what diversity of form there is in the great infinity that we can't see. And if you come from that perspective, then it's instead of coming from this reaction you hear, oh, he believes in little green men. Probably little green men do exist somewhere in the infinity of forever, but certainly humanity is not the only source of form of life in existence. It's teeming with life, but on frequencies that we cannot see.
I've got a fascinating man called David Icke on my program. The book is called Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told. My listeners will be shocked now, David, and they'll be shocked because I am anti-conspiracy theories.
Right.
And I have terrible rows with people and cut people off over the years. Not as much now because I've mellowed a bit. And they will be surprised I'm doing this interview even. If the standard of sort of the world is being controlled the way you're saying, how do people like Trump get in?
Well, Trump is part of it. Let me give you first of all, of course, Liverpool knows about conspiracies called Hillsborough, for instance, which was a conspiracy. We know about conspiracies involving lying about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq to justify a catastrophic invasion and all the catastrophe sequence that has followed. And what is a conspiracy? The different dictionary definition is merely two or more people conspiring to bring about a particular end, usually illegal, in which case we are drowning in conspiracies. And by the way, it's worth remembering that, the mainstream media is quite happy now to acknowledge that it was lied to over weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but it calls anyone that challenges the official story of 9/11 a conspiracy nutter. But it's worth remembering that the very same people, not the same governments, not the same agencies, the same personalities that told us there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq when they knew they weren't, were the same people that gave us the official story of 9/11. And, when you put the dots together and you put the sequence together, you can blatantly see an unfolding sequence that is clearly planned in advance. And I'm going to lead here to the question you've raised about Trump. September 2000, there was an organization in America called the Project for the New American Century, and it published a document in September 2000 calling for America to and the American military to be involved in a series of regime changes. And it named the countries. It wanted regime change in Iraq. It wanted regime change in Syria, in Libya, in Iran, in North Korea, in Lebanon, etc. And also eventually China. Now, the people that wrote that document that were in that organization were people like Dick Cheney, who a few months later would be vice president of the United States, in fact, president in truth under the boy Bush. Donald Rumsfeld, who a few months later would become a Secretary of State for Defense at the Pentagon, his deputy, Paul Wolfowitz, another guy called Dov Zakheim, who a few months later would control the entire budget of the Pentagon. Now, they said in this document in September 2000 that this regime change, this series of regime changes, would be slow unless there was America had another Pearl Harbor. The quote was, the transformation would be slow absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor that would justify what followed in terms of regime change. 1 year to the month after that document was published and 9 months after those people that wrote it came to power with Bush, America had what George Bush called at the time the Pearl Harbor of the 21st century. As a result of that, they went into Afghanistan, and then they started picking off countries on the list. Bush and Blair lied to go into Iraq, and then they were replaced by Obama and Cameron. Now, you've got different parties, Cameron conservative, not Blair Labour. You've got Obama a Democrat, not Bush Republican. But what did they do? They picked off Libya, which they've turned into a catastrophe, and they started the whole sequence of trying to get rid of Assad in Syria, and because there's this hidden hand working in the background, doesn't recognize parties. These here today, gone tomorrow politicians are just pawns in the game. How do you become president unless you attract enormous amounts of money from billionaires galore? And of course, they are the among the people who are in this hidden hand. Now, if we come to Trump, now here's Trump. He's an outsider. He's going to drain the swamp, Trump. He's different. He's going to fight the establishment. He's come in. Look at who he's trying to demonize now. Iran, North Korea, the list continues. Because the hidden hand is always there. And this is the point that I make. Don't look for the here today, gone tomorrow people. Look for that force which is always there. And this is why, people have this saying in America, for instance. They say it doesn't matter who you vote for, the government still gets in, which is kind of talking about the fact that nothing ever changes. Well, nothing ever changes because that hidden hand is always in, and the here today, gone tomorrow people are just pawns in a game.
David, I've got to ask, is the hidden hand tried to destroy the world?
No, just completely take it over and take over, ultimately, human thinking. Right. This is what this connection, this connection that we're so fast moving towards of connecting the human brain to what they call the cloud or artificial intelligence is all about. And what we're facing here, Pete, because in the end, it's a mind game. The target population is about 7.5 billion, right? The number of people who are in full knowledge doing this in the shadows is a relative handful. And most people who are working towards this agenda have no idea there is an agenda. They just go to work, do what they're told, and go home. Because their children and grandchildren are going to be caught in this as well. They don't even know, it's all compartmentalized. You only know enough to do your job. You don't know what your job in terms of connection to other people, what it collectively does, and what's happening, and we're seeing it in front of our eyes now so clearly. Young people particularly, although adults as well, are being systematically addicted to technology, and so they want to get technology, microchips of various kinds, including nano microchips you can't even see, inside the body, inside the brain, to connect us to artificial intelligence. So first of all, you get people addicted to technology they hold, smartphones, tablets, and all that stuff. Then you kind of move them on here, kitty, kitty, kitty. You move them on to technology that they wear, like smartwatches and Bluetooth and Google Glass or whatever. And then, and it's happening now, and this was predicted in my books in the 1990s, they want to get inside the body with what they call implantables. I spoke in Sweden earlier this year, and people there are getting microchipped. They're having parties to celebrate when someone new's getting microchipped. It's and this was in my books, like I say, 25 years ago, because once you access the agenda, you can predict the future. The same with the cashless society and all these things, the Orwellian society, more and more control, more and more destruction of freedom of speech. This is all part of the agenda and was planned long, long ago. And the devil's playground, as I call it, in all this is actually Silicon Valley. Not only because organizations like Google and Facebook are among those driving this transhumanist connectors to artificial intelligence agenda, but also if you look at it, Pete, and of course you're in the whole media as well. More and more people like Facebook and Google are deciding, not least through algorithms, what people see and what they don't see. The censorship is getting more and more fierce, and the ability of people to give their opinion without being castigated, condemned, and Twitter stormed is getting more and more extreme. And this is all part of this process of controlling the narrative. And that's why people like me are considered dangerous, because I will not shut up challenging the narrative.
David, I have never been so quiet in my whole life, I promise you. Before we finish, and please, can we speak again in the new year?
Of course we can. I'm actually speaking in the Liverpool area in the spring, in an evening event. So,
we'll talk before then.
Yeah, we'll definitely speak before then, mate.
I've got to ask one more thing.
Okay.
Now, 4 years ago, I had an interview penciled in with you. It never happened. I then went on my radio show that night because so many people said, please get David Icke on, get David Icke on. He'll blow you out the window, he said. Everybody said to me. I then said I couldn't get you on. And a young man who came on that night said, David Icke won't talk to you because you are a shape-shifting lizard, part of the royal family and the Rothschilds.
Oh, that's all right.
That was 4 years ago.
Yep.
4 years ago. Now, if you put me into Google, I am a shape-shifting lizard. I've got Hulk Hogan holding a poster with 2.5 million hits saying Pete Price is a lizard. Paul McCartney's holding a poster. It has gone viral. And that's because you never did the interview with me. And I've been dying to tell you.
Well, there you go. So I'll put you in the next book then, Pete.
I am not a shape-shifting lizard. So we've got to finish off with shape-shifting lizards. Who are shape-shifting lizards? Does it exist or was it put together by the press?
Well, no, but I mean, the thing is, again, this is the challenge, you see. People talking like one-liners. He says lizards run the world. He says people shapeshift and all that stuff. But without the background, you cannot, in a few sentences, explain why something that sounds so outrageous and out there and ridiculous is actually based in logic. See, what people say is you can't shift from a solid body to another solid body. Do you know what? You can't. But when you break down reality, and this is increasingly mainstream science now, certainly quantum physics levels of science, there is no physical. There is no physical. It's an illusion. I explain why it's an illusion in the book, and it's not complex either. It's quite simple. So what we're doing, you've got Wi-Fi, and the computer tunes into Wi-Fi. So the Wi-Fi is simply information. It's information in an energetic form. The computer then decodes the information into a form that we see on the screen, which is nothing like the form that it was before it was decoded. And our reality is like that. It's the base form of it is actually energetic information. And we decode that information, just like a computer from Wi-Fi, into the world that we think we are seeing. Like, for instance, the world that we're looking at now, and people listening to this show are looking at, only exists in that form, in a few centimeters at the back of the brain, which decodes electrical information that comes through from the five senses into what is actually holographic information, digital holographic information, which is, of course, a holographic is illusory physical. You can look at a hologram. They're getting more and more advanced now, and it can seem very solid, but actually it's just you can put your hand through it. And so when someone is... in our base form, the body is a waveform information field. So when you're looking at someone, and these particular bloodlines I'm talking about are hybrid, and what I mean by hybrid is they have dual energetic information fields, not just one, like we have, like a human field. They have a human field and they have a non-human field, which takes a reptilian form often, but not only. And so when you are looking at these people in the normal course of life, you are decoding the information field of their human field, and they look human. But when that other field, which is usually in the background, but is activated a lot when they do various rituals, I've talked to so many people around the world who've actually been in the rituals and seen it, and they tell the same story, very common themes in different parts of the world. When that other information field that's non-human becomes the dominant one, then any observer starts to decode that, just like switching a channel, if you like. And so to the observer, someone appears to have shifted from a human field to a non-human field. Physically, because that's how we perceive it. But what has actually happened is the observer has decoded the human field. The human field has been overwhelmed by the other field, and now they're decoding that field. And in the observer's decoding processes, in this few centimeters at the back of the brain, they have physically shifted. But they haven't. A, because it would be impossible to physically shift, and B, there is no physical when you really break down reality.
So, am I or am I not a shape-shifting lizard?
You don't sound like one to me, Pete, to be honest, to be absolutely frank. So I wouldn't be concerned about it.
There we are, ladies and gentlemen, from the man himself. It's true, I'm not. Now will you get off my case, all of you? David, what's the book called?
It's called Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, and it's just out.
I've never been so quiet. Thank you so much for speaking
to me. Okay, you can get it at davidicke.com.